And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve.
A balloon.
Steve. A blimp. We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy here.
All right, here we are on a Friday. Chris Brown, Maddie Klab with you on One Bills Live. Lying here in the wake of the Stephon Diggs extension, we'll have some comments from him coming your way from yesterday's press conference. We only got to play the front end of it at the very end of the show. We kind of got gypped a little bit out of that.
Come on, Steph.
So we'll provide some more of his comments that you may have missed on yesterday's show as we had to go off the air before he was finished. Suffice to say, he was pretty darn happy. His brother here was here as well, Trayvon Diggs, as well as his young daughter. So it was truly a family affair here at One Bills Drive for the Diggs family yesterday. And now some tidbits are trickling out about the contract.
Mm-hmm.
And to no surprise, the extension looks like it's going to save the Bills a little over $6 million on this year's cap, so creating almost $6.2 million in cap space this year. And then we understand there's also an option bonus in there from all of the number cruncher guys out there on social media, and that will be spread over the last 5 years of the deal, creating savings in the amount of close to $13 million over those 5 years. So a well-structured contract, as usual, by Brandon Bean and his financial gurus, Jim Overdorf and Kevin Meehan. So good on them for doing that. And, you know, here we are another day in the books closer to the NFL draft. And Maddie and I will dive into that again. I think we'll wrap up our mock draft watch because we had to cut it short because Stephon was starting his press conference. We get it. We don't mind if the mock draft watch is upstaged by a player signing a long-term extension, especially somebody the caliber of Diggs. So we're good with that. And then in hour number two today, we've got our good friend Greg Cosell from NFL Films, who's going to break down the pass rushers in this year's draft. Pass rusher considered by many to be the deepest position in the entire class. And so we're going to try to get through as many of them as we can for as long as we have Greg. I don't know, like, it's going to be really interesting to see, Maddie. Like, we always hear Brandon Bean say best player available. Can you imagine if like there's some pass rusher sticking out at 25 after your first two picks last year were pass rushers and your first pick off the board the year before was AJ Epinesa in round two? So that would be something.
His quote, which was the same quote as last year after they drafted Boogie Basham, would be, well, if I was a betting man, I would have not took the Bills to draft a defensive end in the first round of the 2022 NFL draft. But that would be absolutely wild. I mean, we talked about some intriguing positions in the first round of the draft for the Bills yesterday. You picked linebacker. I picked running back. It seemed like a lot of the callers that we had kind of felt the same way. We heard safety as well out there a couple times. But edge rusher, we didn't hear that yesterday,
No, we didn't, and it would be pretty intriguing. I guess there are some people, and we had even a caller yesterday who commented on, hey, what's up with Jerry Hughes now? Like, is there enough cap space to bring Jerry Hughes back, even on a one-year deal? I think he turns 34 before the season starts. Not to say that he wasn't an effective pass rusher in his age 33 season. But you have Shaq in the fold now, and I kind of feel like that's your veteran guy now. I don't know. I suppose there's always room for one more. And to quote another phrase by Brandon Bean, you can never have enough pass rushers. So you never know. But it's kind of funny to look back at last year's draft, and you know, you always hear – fans always think about the here and now. How's this going to help us this season? And – people were scratching their heads a little bit when the Bills went back-to-back pass rusher. But if you look at the roster now, no Mario Addison, Jerry Hughes, and now you're suddenly pretty happy that you have Boogie Basham and Greg Rousseau on the roster here with A.J. Epinesa as the primary youth movement at the position.
And Brandon Bean has said multiple times, you know, when we're drafting, we're not thinking about, or when we're grabbing guys in free agency, we're not thinking about just the now, just this year. We're not thinking about the trendy thing to do that the Rams did, which was bring them all on for this season. Let's win a championship. He's thinking, how is this going to help the team in 3 years down the road? How does this make sense with the contracts that we have, with the contracts that are going to come up in a few seasons or a couple seasons, whatever that may be? Brandon Bean is thinking about sustaining the success at One Bills Drive with this team. He doesn't want a one and done type of team. He wants to build something that's going to be successful and is going to make a run in the playoffs year after year after year. So some of those moves that were made in the draft or were made in free agency may not make sense this season, but they make sense down the road. And we're seeing some of these moves that he's made in the past start to make sense this season even.
Right. And, you know, we can debate round one all we want. I think it's obviously harder for us to predict what's going to happen. We don't do nearly the research or the mining into all the things that the 24 teams, well, not even 24 teams, because you got about eight teams that don't have a first round pick. You know, the 16 some odd teams in front of them and what they're going to do. I mean, they've researched it 17 different ways to Sunday. You know, we've just kind of taken a cursory look at what's been added in free agency and who might be getting a little long in the tooth at certain positions and just doing some guesswork there. I usually, the first round pick, it always carries intrigue, don't get me wrong, but I like when we get into like day three and it's like, all right, what's left? What do they still want to do probably? And I don't know, I just like the mystery of the last four rounds more than anything else. I don't know. Maybe I'm weird, but it's just part of the draft that I think people don't pay as much attention to. But if you do, it's, I think it's just every bit as entertaining as the top two rounds, just from a strategy standpoint in terms of what your team is trying to get accomplished after, you know, you took your big picks that are probably in all likelihood going to help you right away in their rookie seasons. Now you're looking a little bit with more of an eye towards the future. You know, you're talking about people like Tommy Doyle and Damar Hamlin, who, you know, while they were up and active for some games this year and Damar Hamlin played on special teams, you know, they didn't have these monumental roles. But in a year or two, I mean, that could change dramatically. So I always kind of like seeing those guys that they take. And I think the biggest shame of it is in the last 2 years, the Bills have had late round picks scooped up off their roster. You know, Rashad Wildgoose is with the Jets now. Jack Anderson's with the Eagles. And even the year before, you know, Jake Fromm is with the Giants.
Yeah. Yeah. You think about those late round picks. I mean, who thought the Bills would maybe draft a quarterback in the fifth round when they drafted Jake Fromm? Or Tyler Bass, you could argue, in the sixth round was the most important pick in the 2020 draft just based on his production that season. So you never know what you're going to get with those day three guys and if they are going to be people that compete right off the bat, if they're going to even make the roster. That's been a big conversation the last few seasons. Are there even space for day three players? Well, Brandon Bean loves his draft picks, and he loves competition. So does Sean McDermott when it comes to training camp. So I find those day three picks interesting as well. I'm more of a first round, second round, third round type gal, though.
Yeah, I get it. I'm probably weird. In any event, some NFL news and notes concerning the draft. As we know, pre-draft 30 visits are happening now. That's where each team can have up to 30 draft prospects visit them on site at their team facilities. The only other option is to meet with them in their respective hometown. Ole Miss quarterback Matt Corral is the latest making the rounds. Next week, just next week, he's going to visit Panthers, Eagles, Steelers, Saints, and Falcons. Now, you understand the Falcons.
Busy guy.
You understand the Steelers. You understand the Panthers. What about the Eagles? Isn't that a little interesting? I mean, they just drafted Jalen Hurts 2 years ago. He was the starter, got him to the playoffs last year, but it looks like they're going to be kicking the tires on Matt Corral.
That's pretty interesting to see, to entertain.
And they still have two first-round picks, Maddie. So they can technically use a luxury pick if they want.
If they want. Roll the dice.
Yeah. Because I don't think he's getting to where they are in round two. I don't think he's lasting that long. A lot of people think he might get taken, you know, right at the end of round one.
Even if he's not going to be your guy, if you want to entertain it and you want to put some competition there in the room with Jalen Hurts and you decide we're sticking with Jalen, that can be used as some capital moving on.
Absolutely. And the Eagles actually have done that over the years where they've traded backup quarterbacks, young quarterbacks that they've drafted. Andy Reid used to make sure they drafted a quarterback almost every year, not in the top one or two rounds, but they would always draft one, and the kid's name is going to escape me, but he was a fifth-round draft pick of the Eagles. I want to say out of Oregon. Was it A.J. Feely? Was it A.J. Feely? I don't know why that name's sitting in my head. Fifth-round pick of the Eagles, like mid-2000s. They traded him to the Dolphins for like a two. And so that was just a small example of how the Eagles.
You're right.
Is it A.J.
Yes,
Feely?
Yes, I think you are correct.
I always used to worry I had the wrong guy because there was a punter also by the name of Jay Feely. And then there was a former Dolphins quarterback named Jay Fiedler. But A.J. Feely
was the fifth-round pick of the 2001 NFL draft by the Eagles. He spent his rookie season as the third-string quarterback backing up Donovan McNabb.
Yeah. And then I think he got traded to the Dolphins after that.
Yep, he was traded to the Dolphins. Good mind, Brownie.
Some of it's still,
way to go.
Some of it's still registering up there. but, yeah, that's an example. See, they've done it for a while, though. They're not afraid to draft multiple quarterbacks. Now, I don't know if they might be more gun-shy now in light of how poorly Carson Wentz took it. When they drafted Jalen Hurts, Matty, he wasn't the same ever again. Like, had trouble taking hard coaching, had trouble with competition in the room. So, I mean, you can make whatever argument you want. Did that mean the Eagles missed on his personality makeup when they drafted Carson Wentz and traded up to get him, number two in the draft? Or was it some other circumstance that led to the deterioration of that relationship? Or conversely, do they feel confident that Jalen Hurts has enough self-confidence where he just says, bring on all comers, I don't care who you draft, it doesn't affect me. That might be the case too. So do they go back to drafting quarterbacks as frequently as they did in the early to mid-2000s? It'll be interesting to see now that we know that Matt Corral is visiting the Eagles next week.
I want to add that I wish I was one of these kids who got to go on these visits and one of the popular names who just went on visit after visit, because yes, you get a tour of the facility and that may get old because you're doing that all the time.
Yeah.
But you're getting your airfare paid for, you're staying in a new place.
Probably
you get
a posh hotel.
Yeah, you get wined and dined, maybe not wined, but you get to stay at a really nice hotel, probably and you get a really nice dinner.
Yeah, probably eating a bone-in ribeye somewhere.
Like,
at a steakhouse.
Sign me up to have steak at a nice steakhouse over a month of time, like 15 different times.
Yeah. The only thing with that is, I wonder if this would happen, because I tend to think it's only human nature. So let's just say you're a popular quarterback, Matty, just like Matt Corral, and you're going to six different teams next week, and then you got six more lined up the week after that. After you see all these places, I think it's just human nature to have your favorites.
100%.
But you have literally no choice.
Yeah,
in that.
You have no choice.
So I don't know how I would handle something like that. I'd be like all pumped up.
And then you would probably be bummed.
I guess
by
it's kind of like applying
drafted.
To college. You know, you have your favorites, and then in the end, it's not your choice. They got to pick you. And it's the same here in the draft. So I wonder how those guys feel about that stuff. Like, oh, man, I really like that head coach. The facilities were amazing. Love to be able to play with this guy who maybe they played with in college or something.
Yep.
And so it's just human nature. You just have your favorites. And so that's got to be tough sometimes, especially when you don't go to the team you were hoping for. I'm trying to remember certain drafts where you knew there were some favorites that players had in terms of teams they wanted to go to. And then, you know, not to pick on the Lions, but they get drafted by the Lions or, you know, something like that. And it's just like, oh, boy, goes over like a lead balloon. Derek Stingley, the cornerback from LSU, had a pretty good pro day the other day. He's got some pre-draft 30 visits as well. Jaguars, Lions, Jets, Giants, Texans. So a lot of teams in the top half of round one, which probably makes sense. He's figured to go somewhere in the top 15, 16 picks. So the right teams are interested in him. And, you know, this is going to continue through the month. I think the thing that's most interesting, though, Maddie, is the difference with some teams open and free about who's rolling in.
Mm-hmm.
It's like Fort Knox here.
Lock
you
it
don't
up.
Know who's
Lock
coming in.
Lock it up, baby. We have the number 25 pick. We're not telling anybody anything.
Right, which is kind of, I mean, to some extent, it's kind of funny because, you know, there's only six people picking behind you or seven people picking behind you in round one.
And also, at the number 25 pick, you have no idea
well,
what's going to happen.
That
you have
too.
No clue who's going to be available.
Right, and I think the approach is different. Like, for teams in the top 10, they need to be absolutely certain if they have any question marks on a player.
Yeah.
And that's one of the main reasons they bring them in. Like, hey, let's cross all the T's, dot all the I's on this guy so we feel 100% confident if we make him a top 10 draft choice. When you're picking at 25, sure, you want to be sure about the player, just as you do any person you draft. But I kind of wonder if you pick and choose differently when you're picking down there, not only because, as you said, the multitude of scenarios that could unfold is impossible to predict. And then number two, do you use the pre-draft visit to finish up some outstanding homework?
Mm-hmm.
Might not even be a first-round guy. You know what I mean? Like, or it might even
That's
be.
That's true.
I've seen some teams do this. They'll bring in late round priority free agent guys where they bring the guy in for a visit for the sole purpose of him getting to know them and spending the day with them, treating them right. How many seventh round picks are getting that kind of treatment? Not many. So now, let's say you hypothetically get to the end of the draft and the kid's still sitting out there.
Because there are kids that a lot of teams will go after.
Right. So now it's undrafted free agent mm-hmm. time. And if you think that guy's going to be a popular undrafted free agent, now you can get on the phone and say, hey, man, we really like you. That's why we had you in for the visit. Hope you enjoyed your time here. Hope you felt good about what you heard from us. Sign with us. And sometimes that pre-draft 30 visit
off.
For a priority free agent lands the guy. And now your roster is that much stronger at a bargain basement price. Because you built a relationship with a pre-draft 30 visit. It doesn't happen a lot,
yeah.
But it does happen.
That makes sense.
Around the league.
I looked up a couple players who did not want to go to the team they were drafted by. John Elway was number one on the list that I looked at. It was a bunch of sports. Kobe Bryant was number two. Eli Manning also on that list.
That's
remember
right.
that? And then Bo Jackson as well.
Bo Jackson. I can't even remember. Who the heck drafted Bo Jackson?
It was universally known that the Tampa Bay Buccaneers intended to select Bo Jackson. And then he was drafted by
the Raiders.
The Raiders. Yeah. Seventh round.
Yeah, because people were unsure about his dual sport mm-hmm. interests. And the Bucs were, at that time, very much a joke. And the Bucs were the Lions of the 80s. They were. So, yeah. And John Elway was absolutely not playing for the Colts,
yep.
who were the Lions of the 70s and 80s as well. So, yeah. And the Chargers organization is one that, yes, they've made it to one Super Bowl. And, you know, they won an AFL title a long, long time ago. But I know that there are certain people that will become professional athletes that – For whatever reason, I'm not going to pretend to know what they are. There's like something with the Chargers that rubs people the wrong way, too. I don't know what it is. But, yeah, that's where Eli Manning stood. And, you know, even though they drafted him, they orchestrated that trade, as we all know, Philip Rivers for Eli Manning and some other capital. And gigantic.
It would be interesting to see how things would have worked out if he didn't go to the Giants and he stayed with the Chargers. I love playing those what-ifs scenarios.
It would have been interesting. It really would have because, It's not like the Chargers were a bad team. I mean, I think Marty Schottenheimer was coaching them at that time, mm-hmm. and I think they went 14-2 and got bounced from the playoffs because of crappy field goal kicking. I think I want to say it was Nate Kading that choked in the playoffs, and they lost to the Jets in San Diego on a 14-2 team that had LaDainian Tomlinson. So,
yeah, they went 12-4. Marty Schottenheimer was their coach.
Yeah, they had a lot of playoff disappointment.
First in the AFC West.
The Mannings do their homework. They had their reasons, and it worked out for Eli because he had ended up with two Super Bowls.
That's true.
The only guy to definitively beat Tom Brady in the Super Bowl twice. I mean, yes, you know, there's what is his record in the Super Bowl? 7-3?
That sounds right.
I think he's
7-3. From the numbers that I remember reading in the playoffs this past year.
So, oh, the Eagles. The Eagles are the other team that beat them. So, Nick Foles and Eli Manning are the quarterbacks that.
How about that?
Nick Foles, man.
Trip down memory lane.
That's at the top of the resume. That's at the top of the resume. Speaking of Tom Brady, Maddie, there is a card collector in the UK, huge, gigantic NFL fan, is a big-time card collector ever since he was a kid. And his first exposure to American football was a college bowl game. I want to say it was the Orange Bowl or the Fiesta Bowl. Michigan upsets Alabama. Quarterback Tom Brady leads a comeback. They beat Alabama by like 17 points. Win the Orange Bowl. This guy is so impressed with what he watches. After the draft happens, he goes out and buys a Tom Brady rookie card in 2000. Guess how much he paid for it?
$5.
$6.
Oh.
You're right there. $6. So now.
How much is it worth now?
So, yeah. So his card. Now, they have this whole grading system.
Yes.
Can actually send. My son is big into this. He sends cards out to get.
My dad is going through this right now. Yes.
It costs a lot of money.
Yes. My dad.
And then you have to insure what you're sending in the mail.
Yeah. He sent in like 20,000 cards.
Whoa.
He's going to try and sell his entire collection. So we were big baseball card collectors when we were kids. And I still have my binder full of baseball cards. And my dad was a big baseball card collector when he was a kid. Also, I think basketball as well. But he has some really, really good rookie cards for baseball players. I can't remember off the top of my head.
Ryan Sandberg, I'm guessing.
Probably. But you get those evaluated. And if they have the tiniest nick,
yep,
on the card, they're not worth anything.
They worry about whether the photo is centered.
Yes,
like
it's
in
wild.
The middle of the card,
it's like
if it's
you
a little
have the
off,
card. Just give me the $10,000 for it or whatever.
Like
it's
when
worth.
When I was a kid, it was all about the rounded. Oh, don't have any rounded corners, you know, mm-hmm. or don't have a crease
yes,
in the thing.
Yes,
I mean, it's crazy to me to think that we used to put baseball cards in the spokes of our bicycles to make it sound like a motorcycle.
My dad was telling me the same thing on the phone like 2 weeks ago. I'm like, what? What? You guys what?
I totally ruined way too many Reggie Jackson cards in the back wheel of my bicycle. But getting back to the Brady card. So online, a Brady rookie card, ungraded, can go for as much as $50,000. But
wild.
There was a officially graded mm-hmm. Brady rookie card. It was it had a 9 rating for mint. The highest it can be is 10. And it sold last June for $3.1 million.
No.
Yeah.
Stop.
Highest sum ever paid for a football card at a public auction. Previous record was for the same exact card 2 months before. This guy has like he's got one of those, and he's got a bunch of other Brady. He's got a huge collection.
Why invest in the stock market? Just invest in playing cards.
He's very nervous. He's reluctant to get it graded because he's nervous about sending it in
mm-hmm.
and then it getting lost in the mail or something.
Yeah,
like
you'd want to take
so
that
he's
in
terrified.
Yourself.
So he puts it in his safety deposit box. That's where it is.
Oh my god.
He says, I go to the bank every once in a while and look at it. But what'd you do today? An investment.
Oh, I just went and looked at Tom at the bank.
Talk about an investment, though. I mean, he said, I call Tom Brady my pension, which I think is hilarious. and as if that wasn't enough Tom Brady news, there is this.
We got more.
We didn't have a chance to get to this on yesterday's show, but it is pretty startling stuff that Brady, according to reports, almost became a Dolphins part owner slash player.
Which, could you imagine that?
This past February.
I was reading that and I was like, there is no way.
Well, no longer under contract to the Bucs. Mm-hmm. And according to some of these reports, Maddie, so he announces retirement February 1st. Okay. Doesn't use the word retirement, but, you know, says I'm spending more time with my family, whatever. Everybody assumes it's a retirement announcement. Shortly thereafter, reportedly has a deal done with the Dolphins for playing and being a part owner in 2022. And then the same day, the Brian Flores lawsuit drops against the Dolphins, the league, five other teams. And it wouldn't surprise me then if Brady's like, yeah, you know what? I don't think
I'm
I want to be a part
I'm
of
out. That. I'm out. I'm good. I'm good here.
Can you imagine?
And take my talents elsewhere.
Can you imagine the AFC East with Brady back in it, but for the Dolphins, especially if they still pull off the Tyreek Hill deal with Jalen Waddle, Mike Gesicki?
I don't even want to think about it. Imagine how pissed off Bills fans would be.
Well, not only that. Think about the Patriots fans because
Patriots fans, I think if you asked, first and foremost.
I think if you asked most Patriots fans, the Bills would be last on the list in the division of teams that they hate. Like if you gave Patriots fans an order, give me the teams you hate the most in the division. I'd say it's between the Jets and the Dolphins for number one. Because the Dolphins always beat them once every year, even when they had Brady. They have some, remember the miracle game they had a few years ago? And beat Brady and the Patriots, and they had some other ones. They beat him late at the end of one season and had to share the division title with the Dolphins.
Yes, I remember that.
So there are a whole bunch of reasons. So I think the bitterness would have been at a froth of a level if he played for the Dolphins, go back to New England once a next year. Oh, my gosh. Like, the Tampa thing was, welcome home, Tom.
Yeah.
Coming in as a division
Tampa
opponent.
Tampa Tom. Tampa. Ha-ha.
Yeah. Nice. Coming in as a division rival for the Dolphins. Like, that, I think it's a completely different conversation for Patriots fans. And obviously, Bills fans would be all up in arms.
He's back in our division. What
can't
is going on?
He's
you
like
can't
a
get
cockroach.
Rid of him. One player who did say that they were maybe a little bit sad to see him leave. I remember Tre'Davious White was asked about it, and he was like, "Yeah, you know, Tom's a great player, and he did so much for the Patriots when he was on the team. He's so hard to beat. But honestly, I kind of wanted to beat him. So him being out of the division, I don't have the chance to do that unless we happen to play the Buccaneers. So." There's some guys that want that type of competition.
So the Dolphins were reportedly ready to announce the deal on Super Bowl weekend that Brady was going to sign with them and be a part owner as well. And then this bomb. They were also planning to announce the hiring of Sean Payton as their new head coach. Payton and Brady?
Absolutely.
Then I would
wild.
Start to get a little concerned.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like. Mm-hmm. Brady and Sean Payton, and then Tyreek Hill on top of that? Holy crap.
Mm-hmm.
That would have turned this division completely on its ear.
People would be talking about the AFC East just as much as they're talking about the AFC West.
And they wouldn't be talking about the Bills. They'd be talking about Brady, Sean Payton, and the Dolphins. Uh-huh. And then if the Tyreek Hill thing happened on top of it, forget it. They'd be picking them to win the division.
They would be the favorite of the division, 100%.
Yep.
So, I don't agree with that, but 100%.
I was reading this, and as I was going through, it was one
it
of those things where my mouth just kept opening wider and wider. Like, my jaw just kept hanging further. And Peyton? Why? Like, I couldn't believe it. And then I was just like, Brian Flores, you're a good man. and I'm not trying to make light of his lawsuit, but His timing was impeccable.
To think about what could be, as I was just saying, if Eli Manning would have played for the Chargers, to think about what could have happened if that scenario would have played out.
That's nuts.
Absolutely wild.
Yeah. This season would have been completely off the chain.
I mean, this free agency has already been off the chain in so many different ways. It's like the NFL is becoming the NBA in so many different ways.
We have to take a break here, but we do want to remind you that the OBL Fan Friday mailbag is open. You can give us a call at 803-0550, 1-888-550-2550. If you have any questions about the Bills, the draft, the league at large, what have you. And we also have a little mock draft watch to revisit. So we will do some of that when we return here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Put that tape and win the game.
For Stephon Diggs, this has been a long time coming. A star wide receiver getting paid like one.
Allen over the middle to Diggs. Touchdown! Allen delivers. Touchdown! Stephon Diggs! Allen looking at Diggs. Going to Diggs. Diggs got it. Buffalo touchdown. Stephon Diggs.
Pass is caught. Reaching across for the touchdown.
All right, that is Stephon Diggs' highlight reel for our MSG viewers. And while we're taking your phone calls at 803-0550, open lines for you there for the OBL Fan Friday mailbag with any questions you might have, we did want to pass along some of the comments from Stephon Diggs that did not make it on air for us yesterday because we had to go off the air as he only addressed the media at about 2:43 in the afternoon yesterday, and we had to be off the air 12 minutes later. So we only got you the first 10 minutes or so of his press conference. So the first comment we wanted to toss your way was his description of the reaction from his teammates and from people around the league after he agreed to terms on the contract extension.
You get a lot of text messages. I know I got text messages from guys across the league as far as being in the AFC and playing with the Bills. And I was like, it's crazy because when I first got traded to Buffalo, besides the mafia and the people who are fans of Buffalo, not too many people thought it was going to work out. A lot of people were like this, well, the Bills, da 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 da. And 2 years from now I can smile and say, you know, God works in mysterious ways. And I'm with my family, I'm with the right people, and I got the right support system.
I mean, I think that's pretty obvious to Bills fans, but 2 years ago, people that didn't know what was going on here or what Sean McDermott was trying to build in that locker room were like, good luck going up there, buddy, you know?
Yeah, and I mean, people also thought the diva label was getting slapped on Stephon Diggs, and it was like, oh, is he going to work in Buffalo's locker room? And that was quickly proven, like, This guy is not a diva. He's not anything close to a diva in the locker room. He's actually one of the team captains. So I do think it's interesting to think about how many people thought it wouldn't have worked out, and now it has, and he can kind of laugh at them a little bit.
I remember shortly after the trade was made, Brandon Bean was asked that very question, are you concerned about the diva label that some people give Stephon Diggs? And he said, we did our homework on it, and what we learned was his desire to move on from Minnesota was rooted in his desire to have a greater impact on helping the team win.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't necessarily a me thing. It was, I know I can make us a better team if I am more involved within the scope of the offense. And Minnesota, admittedly, was moving more towards being a run-first team with Dalvin Cook, who is a fantastic talent. I mean, don't get me wrong, but I think he felt my talents aren't being maximized here to help this team enough, and maybe I need to look somewhere else. And my God, he couldn't have landed in a better place, right?
And he also is even the type of person here to be like, I want the ball more. There's so many great receivers on this team. We all want to catch the ball. We all want the ball more because we think that we can help the team win. But in the same breath, he's also like, I love watching these guys help the team win. I love watching players like Gabe Davis or, you know, Isaiah McKenzie, you name it, Dawson Knox, being able to catch passes or taking some of that, taking some of the defenders to be on me so there's an open guy in the field. So I think it's so awesome how well it has worked out. I am such a fan. Of course, we get to cover this team, but to get to know him a little bit, to get to see him next to Josh Allen and their friendship, I'm so obsessed with it. And to think about one of the best players in the NFL wanting to retire in Buffalo based on how far Buffalo has come over the last several years is wild.
Diggs, obviously, with that trade, did not have the final decision in where he was going to play after he left Minnesota. That was the Bills' decision and Minnesota's to a lesser extent. And it worked out, as we said, for him. I don't know if it could have worked out any better anywhere else. But here, Stephon explains how he came to see Buffalo as the ideal destination for him.
I was really focused on just like football. I came here one track mind. I came here to work hard. I came here to earn my keep. They gave up a lot for me, so I wanted to not necessarily just prove everybody else right, but prove myself right as well. I believed in myself. I believed that I could do it. I believe I could be wide receiver one. So it wasn't necessarily a gamble because I knew what I could do. But for them, I was just more thankful that they, you know, they took a chance. You know, they took a real chance. And it wasn't business when I got here. It was like family, and like I didn't feel no pressure. Like when you talk about pressure, I didn't feel any pressure to be anybody but myself. And that's why I feel like I'm such in a great place because, you know, being yourself brings you comfort. It brings you happiness. And I don't have to wake up and say that I'm anybody else. I could just be myself, and, you know, they love me up.
They love me up. Well, it's easy to love when you have 127 catches for 1,500 yards, and then you have 10 touchdowns the next year after another 100-catch season. So, yeah. I still remember when I came on this show, when Murph and Steve were doing it, to kind of lend some background on Stephon Diggs when the trade was made. And I said then, look, he hasn't been a high-profile guy because he's playing in Minnesota, and obviously Bills fans didn't see a lot of him because they don't play the Vikings every year. Being in the other conference, I said, the Bills are getting an elite receiver. This guy is like one of the best five route runners in the league. He is an elite receiver, so if Josh comes along, they're going to really have something here, and that proved to be true. So, yeah, I mean, it was a fortuitous move by Brandon Bean, who had tried previously to pry him out of Minnesota the previous year, and they couldn't pull it off. The timing wasn't right, what have you. I think Minnesota's pick in the first round that year when they did pull off the trade gave them good confidence in what was a good receiver draft that they'd be able to replenish their roster appropriately. And my God, Justin Jefferson. So it worked out for both teams when you think about it.
It really did. And how often does that happen where it works out for both teams? I mean, usually rarely it works out for both teams. But I think it was super important also for Stephon to have a great season this past year. I mean, you have that first season with the Bills where you lead the NFL in receptions and receiving yards, which was the first time a receiver has done that on the Buffalo Bills. Mm-hmm. And then it's like, all right, what are you going to do in year two? Can you match that? A lot of people think it's going to be really hard. And maybe he didn't get those exact numbers or was the leader in receptions or receiving yards, but he went over 100 catches and over 1,000 receiving yards. That's another great second mm-hmm. season to have on a team when defenses know you're the guy that they have to scheme for.
Right.
And they're going to try and limit you every different way that they can.
And he led the team with 10 touchdowns last year, so and tied a team record. The record's 11 in a season, Billy Brooks.
Mm-hmm.
But was right there challenging the single-season touchdown record for the Bills as well. The most interesting answer that I wanted to hear was when Stephon Diggs was asked about new offensive coordinator Ken Dorsey, his thoughts on Dorsey's promotion and his relationship with the new OC, which did exist previously. So here's Stephon on that subject.
We've talked a couple of times, especially, you know, because it's off season, everybody has their downtime, but a lot of those guys spend their time here is their downtime. But we've spoken a couple of times, and it's, you know, that's when I say that family thing. It's not the same, because in other places you see, you might not have necessarily a relationship with your quarterback coach because he's not your specific coach. But here, you know, I talk to Dorsey every morning. We crack a joke every morning. That was before he became the OC. So, and I had that relationship throughout the season of, you know, him kind of being that middleman between me and Josh as well, like as far as like with certain things that I like. And I can tell Josh, but, you know, it kind of got to circle around in that coaching room as well. So I kind of somewhat built a relationship with Doris there, and it kind of just was some rollover with him becoming OC. I'm like, damn, oh, you know, I didn't break a sweat at all. I got 100% confidence in Doris. And we kind of like, when I was like having conversations with him in the season, as far as like with plays and routes that I like, and he was like this, well, we could do it this way, we could do it that way. And just having that creative offensive mind, it got me excited.
What was the number one thing, Maddie, that Bills players on offense liked about Brian Daboll? It was the fact that he was open-minded,
mm-hmm.
would take any suggestion that anybody had and give it firm consideration. This is similar. It's not exactly the same thing, but it's similar. It's an example of, here's a quarterback's coach taking input from a receiver who says he doesn't feel comfortable running a route a certain way or executing a play concept a certain way, and he provides an alternative, which is very much the same thing that Brian Daboll would do. Oh, you've got a better idea? Let me hear it, mm-hmm. and we'll see if we can do it this way. And I think because it seems like they think along the same wavelength, Daboll and Dorsey, that a lot of the players, as you could tell by Stephon, he's not even worried about it.
No, it seems like every single player that we've asked what they think of Ken Dorsey, everybody says the same thing. Like, this is going to be a great transition. He's so awesome. We love him as a quarterback's coach. And for a wide receiver, for Stephon Diggs to be like, I already have a relationship with him. We talk in the hallway every morning. I think that says a lot about Stephon Diggs, but also about Ken Dorsey, and that he wants to have a relationship when he was the quarterback's coach mm-hmm. with more than just the quarterback. So I think it's going to be a very smooth transition within the team. And also the other thing that sticks out to me is the communication right there. It is so important for a successful team to have communication in every different facet, and to have an open line of communication going both ways between the players and the coaches. Mm-hmm. Because if you don't have that, things can go a little bit south, whether it be in the locker room or whether it be with he said, she said, or the coaches think this, the players think that. I think the communication between the players and the coaches on this team since Sean McDermott and Brandon Bean have gotten here has just been really, really great.
Yeah, and you don't see that on even some of the best teams where you have receivers talking to quarterback coaches, because that's just not their position coach, and sometimes never the twain shall meet. But that is not the case here. There's a lot of crosstalk and a lot of cross communication, and obviously it benefits the product on the field. We have to take a break here, but when we come back, what streaming service is the NFL taking a closer look at to consider collaborating with coming up sooner rather than later? Maddie and I will dive into that next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health. It's Buffalo Bills Radio. So the NFL, Maddie, has had discussions with Netflix. They apparently were intrigued by the popularity of the Formula One docuseries Drive to Survive, which rocketed the fan base of Formula One racing into the stratosphere. And so word is they're not looking for live programming like games or anything. They're looking into reality shows or documentaries of some kind. I don't think that HBO loses Hard Knocks.
Yeah, I was going to say, with that, mm-hmm. it's a little bit interesting because I feel like the NFL already has something. They have Hard Knocks,
right.
And then Amazon did the Series 2, which I'm forgetting the name.
Oh.
The Gosh, what is the name?
I'm completely unable to help you in this because I can't think of it or what you're talking about. But I will say this: so they've already got
All or Nothing.
Oh, All or Nothing, right? Okay, but those are team
true
based,
yes,
right?
Team based,
yeah. Because the Cardinals did that, and I think one other team did it. And then they obviously have Hard Knocks on HBO. So I'm curious to see what they might come up with for either, you know, a docuseries or some reality show. Reality show scares me a little bit, I'm going to be honest. Because I think, to be frank, haven't reality series kind of run their course here? Like, we're going on, like, over 20 years of reality television.
It
happened right around 2000.
Yeah, I don't know. I think about how intense, in a good way, like there are boundaries and barriers of what you can and cannot film, and some coaching staffs are more strict than other staffs.
Yeah.
And there's the whole conversation of we probably wouldn't want a reality show or anything that really shows what they do in their free time, because we want these guys to just be focusing on football and not lose focus of what's the most important thing. I could kind of just see a reality show going south with everything that
they used to have
teams deal with already.
There used to be versions where you'd see the football players on Pimp My Ride mm-hmm. and stuff like that. Not every week, but there would be a healthy number of them, and a lot of guys like their rigs a lot. We remember MTV's Cribs. There were some NFL players on
there. Throwback.
So I don't know if they're thinking along those lines or something completely new. I think they could do a fun one around the draft, because that's not necessarily peering into one team's thing.
And draft would be
fun. But maybe the draft event. You know,
or you could just do a whole offseason. Like, what do these players do in the offseason? That's something that it would work if you want to, like, peek into their lives, I think. Teams wouldn't, or coaching staffs wouldn't care that much.
Not to mention the fact that people this time of year are football starved and will go searching for anything that's football related.
Seriously.
So make the NFL even more year-round than it already is. All right, we got to take a break here. Coming up next is our good friend Greg Cosell, senior producer at NFL Films. We're going to talk pass rushers in the 2022 draft class with him. Coming up next here on One Bills Live, presented by Kaleida Health, it's Buffalo Bills Radio.
Tasker, touchdown, Buffalo. And it's Steve Tasker who has been all over the field.
Kind of unique. He was kind of a dual role player for you.
Steve!
A balloon.
Steve! A blimp? We're not even in the stratosphere of normalcy. All right, here we are. Hour number two on a Friday. Chris Brown, Maddie Glab with you. And that time of the week means this person is joining us, at least all the way through the pre-draft period. Senior producer from NFL Films, Greg Cosell, joining us as we are going to talk pass rushers in this draft class, and considered by many to be the deepest position in the entire class. Before we jump headfirst into the pool here with the pass rushers, though, Greg, just curious, you see the Stephon Diggs extension, and while that's great in terms of locking him up, giving him long-term security, the fact remains that the Bills' really only true outside wideouts are Stephon Diggs and Gabriel Davis. They got some slot guys here, but there is a perceived need anyway from people like us that it's a position they may still have to address.
I would agree with that. And as we discussed a couple of weeks ago, Chris and Maddie, I don't think you were there then, but I think they're probably going to look for some speed, because even though both Diggs and Davis can get vertical on occasion, you wouldn't really call either one of those true vertical stretch kinds of receivers. And my sense is, given who the quarterback is and his ability to drive the ball down the field as well as anyone in the league, that they would like to see some speed on the perimeter. And the nice thing about that is that player does not have to be a quote-unquote big-time number one. He needs to be more of a niche receiver who brings a vertical element. So you don't necessarily need that guy in the first round. Now, obviously, we don't know what they're going to do, but I would think they would address that position for sure.
Yeah, it'll be intriguing to see who they draft at wide receiver if they choose to draft that position on day one or day two. I'm really interested to see if any receivers are going to fall to maybe 25, if anybody's going to be sticking out there for the Bills to grab. But edge rusher is the position in this year's NFL draft. We've heard this name so many times talked about. He's going to go super early. It's Aiden Hutchinson. Would you like to break down Aiden Hutchinson? What does he bring to the NFL? What are some of his strengths and something that, you know, teams won't be able to live without, especially the teams drafting in the top three?
Well, he's a very good prospect. I wouldn't call him special. There's no Von Millers in this draft as far as pass rushers. And it's funny, Chris, you mentioned that people view it as deep. I think it's deep, but I don't think it's special. So I would say Hutchinson is a strong prospect. He's got excellent body length, although some view his arm length, which is extremely short for his height, as a potential issue. But he's very quick off the ball. He can rush the quarterback, as they say, from tip to tip, meaning he can work the high side, the outside, and the low side inside. He has a really good inside counter move. He works hands, hips, feet really well. He's extremely well coordinated in that way, has good play strength. And what really stood out, and this is why I really enjoy watching full games, is he had a plan, a pass rush plan for everybody he faced. And I think that's something you rarely see in college football with pass rushers who tend to rely on their physical ability and their traits. But he had a plan for attacking who he played against, and that's a really positive sign.
The thing for me about him, Greg, is there are no wasted opportunities with him. I don't know if there's a guy that finishes better than him in the class. If there's an opportunity, he's usually cashing in on it. You could probably count on one hand the opportunities he's had in the offensive backfield that he did not make good on.
That's a great point. He didn't miss much at all, if anything. And I saw a lot of tape and a lot of games. And I think he's a guy that could fit into multiple front looks because he obviously can play on the outside. He can play standing up. He can play with his hand in the ground. He had numerous snaps inside at three technique and sub fronts. So you can do a lot with Hutchinson. And while you wouldn't call him special in terms of his traits, because he's not a sudden or twitchy athlete, he's just a very, very good player and the kind of guy to me that'll be a really good player for a lot of years in the league.
And while I think he's probably your highest floor player, NFL-ready player, the guy that may have the highest ceiling is a guy who does not have short arms, Trayvon Walker, 35.5-inch arms,
yeah.
Greg.
Yeah, that's pretty good. Walker's an interesting guy, Chris, because he didn't really play as an edge rusher at Georgia. I mean, he obviously lined up as a wide nine player at times, but that's not what he really did. He played both on the outside. He played more snaps on the inside. So he's a guy that if you draft him early and say, he's my edge pass rusher, that's a bit of a projection. Now, I really like the player. His measurables were outstanding. You mentioned the arm length. He really had a very fast 40-yard dash for a 6'5", 272-pound player. But I think he's a guy that his game is more physical than speed and burst. He's got really heavy hands. He's physical, I mean strong. Now, he does have very good short area quickness. That's something that really stood out on tape. And there's a powerful feel to his game. But I think he's just scratching the surface of what he may or may not become as a pass rusher. And, you know, when I watched his tape, I thought of a player that came out of Kentucky a number of years ago, actually as a fourth round pick, and has turned into a good pro, but it didn't happen right away. And that's Za'Darius Smith. And they're about the same size. And as I said, you do have to make a projection with Walker if you draft him and say he's an edge pass rusher, because that's not really what he did a lot of, even though he showed he could do it.
Another interesting player who's an Oregon product is Kayvon Thibodeau. He's been talked about a lot, maybe for some of the quotes he's had and in different certain situations and scenarios, but he shows up on tape. What is different about Kayvon Thibodeau when you're talking about these different edge rushers?
Yeah, he's another guy that I'll be fascinated to see how his career goes, because he has excellent get off. He's twitchy when he gets off a snap, and explosive in that way. He's more of a speed to power rusher. There's a physicality to his game. The issue for him is his lower body stiffness. What he really struggles to do is to flatten his rush path when he clears the, as they call it, the arc. When he gets beyond the offensive tackle on the outside, they call that the arc. When he clears that arc, he really struggles to flatten his rush path because he's got lower body stiffness. The player he kind of reminds me of, and he's 20 pounds less, is Jadeveon Clowney, because Clowney is probably going to be with his fifth team at the age of 28. And as you guys know, if you're a premier edge pass rusher, you're not with five teams by the age of 28, because Clowney is not a premier edge pass rusher and really never has been. And Thibodeau kind of reminds me of him just because of the lower body stiffness and inflexibility, and he can't really work off the edge at a high level.
A guy that was a former teammate of Trayvon Walker decided to transfer to get more playing time.
Yeah.
And boy, did he make the most of it at Florida State. Jermaine Johnson, who is kind of a long-bodied guy.
Yes.
His arms aren't quite as long, but I'd take 34 inches if I was an NFL team with this guy, Jermaine Johnson.
Yeah, I liked his tape quite a bit. You're right. He left Georgia because Georgia has, you know, everybody on their defense is a five-star recruit out of high school,
yeah,
and you just can't play every snap. So I think he really is a guy that is just scratching the surface of what he can be as a true edge player. He plays much stronger than his frame. He's got kind of a lean, wiry frame, but there's a power element to his game, both as a run defender and a pass rusher. And he's got natural quickness to him. I wouldn't say he's a natural bender off the edge, but he can bend. And I think there's much to unlock as a pass rusher when it comes to technique, counters. And I think that, the way I think about him, it wouldn't surprise me, guys, if in 2-3 years we're talking about him as arguably the best edge pass rusher. Maybe not the best player overall, although I think he and Hutchinson, they could be right there together. But I think Johnson really has a lot to offer.
I think a lot of Bills fans would be shocked if the Bills drafted an edge rusher with the number 25 pick in the NFL draft. But there have been a couple that have been mocked to the Buffalo Bills out of the mock drafts that we have tracked. And one of those players is George Karlaftis out of Purdue. He's actually been mocked to the Buffalo Bills once at that number 25 spot. So what makes George Karlaftis an interesting candidate, maybe not for the Bills, but for whoever decides to draft him? He's 6'4 and 266 pounds.
Yeah, he's one of those kind of old school base DNs that you get from the Big Ten, you know, in some ways like Epinesa. Karlaftis was a state high school shot put champion, and that shows up in the way in which he plays. He's incredibly strong in his upper body, strong, powerful hands, tremendous upper body strength. And he has a nuanced feel to how to attack offensive tackles. Another guy with a plan. The issue with Karlaftis is his lower body does not necessarily support what he can do with his upper body and his hands. He's not very flexible in his lower body. So what you see a lot with him is he'll do really well in the initial part of a pass rush where his hands and his strength really are a factor, and then he gets stuck. And one of the things that stood out was too often he stopped his feet because he couldn't really support with his legs what his upper body was doing. So, but he's a guy that, as far as the Bills, if he was a Bill, people would love him because the competitiveness, the effort, the playing personality, as I call it, that just jumps off the charts. You just love watching this guy play.
Yeah, maybe a little bit like an Aaron Schobel type in a bit of a way.
I could see that. I remember him. Yeah, absolutely.
Another guy who I think is scratching the surface a little bit because he's still young in football, but a high motor player and a former soccer player, so I'm instantly a fan here, Arnold Ebikadi, Penn State. And the thing about him was this guy, I just like the way he dips and rips around the edge. That might be the only move he has right now, but it's a pretty darn good one.
Yes, You're right. It's funny you say that because he pretty much just attacks the high side right now because he's still learning. He only played 1 year at Penn State after transferring from Temple, had a great year in the Big Ten. But he's got just what you said, Chris. He has flexibility. He has bend. He can clear the arc. Unlike Thibodeau, he can flatten and close with burst and speed to the quarterback. But you're right. He needs a lot of work. He must develop a wider array of pass rush moves and counters. He has to learn to work the low side of offensive tackles. But there's a lot there athletically. He would strike me as a guy that coaches would like in their room because you can work with this kid. When you have that kind of quickness, that kind of bend and flexibility, that's where you start, and it's a good place to start.
Another Michigan product is David Ojabo, and you speak of soccer players. He played soccer and basketball and actually is from Scotland, so has quite the backstory to him. What jumps off the tape when you turn his tape on?
And it's a shame with what happened to him because it's funny that when you put on Michigan tape, and obviously you're seeing Hutchinson and Ojabo, Ojabo is just a more explosive guy off the ball than Hutchinson. Ojabo is another guy that can flatten the rush path. He is an explosive, sudden mover, and you hope he can remain that way after the Achilles injury. But he plays fast. He's a high-velocity player. He has great balance and body control. He can drive through what we call half-man resistance by offensive tackles, which is different than just pure speed to power. But he can, because he can challenge the edge so fast, he gets to the half man of offensive tackles and he can just drive right through that. And he's another guy that's young, playing the position. So there's much more to be unleashed. And as I said, I hope that can happen because he was kind of a fun watch.
Yeah. The Achilles injury. That's
it was tough to watch.
Chris, who he kind of reminded me of? He kind of reminded me of Robert Quinn coming out of North Carolina.
Oh, okay. That's not a bad
comp. About 10 years ago. Yeah, probably about 10 years ago, I guess it was at this point.
Yeah.
But that's who he reminded me of.
Yeah, if I'm an NFL team, I'd be pretty happy with that. Another pass rusher that I've seen mocked to the Bills a couple of times is the kid out of Minnesota, Boye Mafe. The thing about him, for me, is I'm trying to decide – Greg, because I've only watched a couple of his games, so it's probably not enough.
Yeah.
But he seems like he's a bit stiff-hipped, but at the same time, he seems explosive off the snap. So I'm having trouble on where I want to come down on him.
And that's a great point, because he is an explosive athlete, and he certainly has that sort of size, length, athleticism profile that you like. And the combine measurable showed his explosive traits. But he's still learning how to rush the quarterback. He can challenge the high side immediately. Yeah. And every once in a while, you'd see a flash. You almost have to look at the flashes and hope that he can develop more consistency in executing those flashes because he can be tantalizing. But there's too many frustrating pass rush reps at this point where he got stopped just before the arc and he didn't have any answers. And he needs to develop some answers. But you're right. I wouldn't say he's stiff, but he's just not as loose as you'd like. But he plays the run really, really well.
And then the final player we're going to look at is Drake Jackson out of USC. He had 5 sacks in the 2021 season. So why would teams maybe be interested in Drake Jackson?
Because he's close to 6'3", 254. His arm length is pretty good as well. He sort of fits that profile, Maddie, of the long, athletic, flexible edge rusher. Those guys are always in demand. Another guy that showed flashes. Some of his really good plays, you go, wow, look at the quickness, look at the burst, look at the flexibility. There were times he reminded me of Leonard Floyd when Floyd came out of Georgia. There's that size, there's that length. I think Floyd is a little taller, but Jackson looks tall on tape, even though he's just under 6'3". But I think he's another guy that's a little raw and unrefined in how he goes about rushing the quarterback. So he has a chance to develop into a quality edge rusher. He'll need coaching. He'll need refinement. And I think guys like that, could they get drafted on day two? Absolutely. But it wouldn't surprise me if he's an early day three guy. But because he can rush the quarterback, he could well be a day two pick.
I'm Here's another guy I was a little mixed on, Greg, because I watched some of his junior tape, and he just looked too light in the pants to hold in there on line of scrimmage battles. I haven't really watched much
of Jackson.
Yeah, and I haven't really watched much of his tape from 21. So has he gotten stronger? Is he holding in at the line of scrimmage better? You know, setting the edge, those kinds of things. He just looks a little thin in the pants, like to
And I would agree with
anchor.
That. I would agree, because I made the point that overall he must get stronger throughout his body, and you hope that comes with maturity in an NFL weight room, although I assume USC has a pretty good facility. But you're right about that, Chris. He needs to get stronger overall. And he, when offensive lineman got his hands on him early in the down, he struggled to get off that. So that's something that definitely needs to happen if you're going to see him down the road as a full-time player.
And then finally, Greg, I know you mentioned you think Jermaine Johnson could be one of the best pure pass rushers in this class a few years down the road. But do you have a favorite? Is there a true favorite of yours from this group that, you know, opened your eyes the most?
Well, I think the more I watched of two guys, the more I liked them. It would be Hutchinson and Jermaine Johnson. I think those guys are going to be good players. You know, I think when it comes to pass rushers, as I said, I don't think there's that special guy. You know, I can't remember who I was talking to about this, but somebody said to me that in an ideal world, if this was a great draft class where you had quarterbacks and the whole deal, that someone like Hutchinson would probably be seen as about the 15th pick in the draft. But it's not that kind of draft.
Yeah.
And, you know, when it's your turn, you got to draft. You're not going to say, I'll pass. So, you know, guys are going to get drafted, and Hutchinson is the most complete as we speak right now. And I think Johnson has a chance to be even more dynamic as a pass rusher than Hutchinson. So we'll see as we go down the road.
All right, Greg. Well, listen, we thank you for the insight and all of the tape grinding, because I don't know if I could do that without falling asleep in my chair sometimes.
Well,
I don't know. You know, do your eyes ever? I got to ask you.
Don't give out any secrets here, Chris.
I got to ask you. Do your eyes ever glaze over to the point where you're like, I got to step away for a little bit. I got to go get lunch or something.
Yeah, sometimes. I normally don't step away. I just, you know, do, you know, stupid stuff like a look at social media, you know. But I don't just get up and walk around. But no, sometimes I just have to take a break, particularly when I'm watching full games, because you know, you got to get a feel for the game in addition to the player.
Yeah.
Yeah. I have to believe your optometrist has to get some kind of kickback for all the time. But thanks as always, Greg. We appreciate the time. We'll catch up with you.
Thanks, Greg.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. That's Greg Cosell, senior producer from NFL Films, breaking down the pass rushers.
Wow.
I feel terrible for Ojabo.
I know.
And that footage on social media was awful. Like,
yes,
he's in the middle of the thing. He clearly has a major injury, and people are just walking around him like he's he's cattle.
So sad.
Like, take care of the guy. Yeah. See what's going on. Like, I don't know. Maybe I'm sure the Michigan athletic trainers, if they saw it when it happened, they would have been right there. They must have been at the other end of the field or something. I mean, they got 10, 12 players, you know, going through the pro day there at Michigan. So, but God, I just felt terrible. Like, he's there writhing in pain on the ground, and the awful thing about the Achilles injury, like, as Steve has said many times on our show, an Achilles injury, even as little as 10, 12 years ago, it was a death sentence.
Yeah.
For a professional football player, especially if you're playing an explosive position like pass rusher. So, I mean, I'm sure the technology, you know, and the surgical techniques are better now than they were even 15 years ago, but ACLs are not as big a concern as Achilles are.
That's true.
And that's why it's going to be very interesting to see who takes a chance on Ojabo, who I think, if he's healthy, he's unquestionably a borderline first-round pick.
Mm-hmm.
But because of the Achilles, he's definitely second round and may even slip to the third based on what prognoses are, if there are any out there. You know, all these teams are going to be checking on the medical. Because they're all going. A lot of these players, they go back to Indy for medical rechecks right before the draft, and he would obviously be a prime candidate for that. So, they're going to be mining for all the information they can get on what his prognosis looks like.
I think you just hate to see that because so many players now, not so many, a handful of players now are starting to think about their NFL careers as early as, and talk about their NFL careers, if they want to play in the bowl game that their team has made it to their junior or senior season, if they're going to go into the NFL draft. Yeah. A lot of these guys now are saying, I'm not going to play. I'm just going to start training because I don't want to get injured in that bowl game, which totally makes sense. But the odds of you getting injured are probably pretty slim, depending on the position that you play in. But then to see somebody go through their pro day, which is like,
the last step.
Who's going to get injured in a pro day, too?
Especially an injury of that severity.
You're going through a couple drills that you think are safe, and you have practiced these drills time and time and time again on that field, wherever you are training for the NFL draft, for the pro day, for the combine. You go through mock pro days, mock combines, like, over and over again with your trainers, and for that to happen, it sucks.
Yeah, and I think what makes it even worse for Ajabo is here is a guy that was looking to leave school early. I believe he's a redshirt sophomore. He's 3 years removed from his high school graduation, so he's obviously good for the draft. Only a one-year starter, but it's a guy that wanted to get his career started sooner rather than later. And now, you know, the pause button is effectively on his rookie year. He's probably going to have a redshirt rookie year in the NFL because more often than not, it is a one-year recovery from an Achilles injury. I don't know if the technology is so good now that you can come back sooner than that, but man, you just, to get all the way, like, the finish line is in sight.
To the last step, yes.
The finish line is in sight.
You just hurt for that kid.
And you don't have just a hamstring tweak. You have a one-year rehab ahead of you. I mean, that is just, because the thing with the Achilles that some people may not know is when they reattach it, they don't reattach it end to end. They overlap it and sew it back together on an overlap. And then through physical therapy, you have to use that tendon to eventually stretch it back to its normal length. And that's why it takes so long. Because it's such a grueling recovery to get it back to where it needs to be. So you're not off balance, I guess, with one tendon longer than the other, mm-hmm. and then you're compensating and then you run into other problems. That's why they can't put
whatever,
you on the field.
Whichever team drafts him, they could be very lucky in a year or so.
Yeah. Is there anybody that you like the most? Like, do you like some of these guys, or have you seen enough of any of these guys to have a favorite, or?
I don't know if I have a favorite. I have not paid too much attention to the edge rushers.
Yeah, well, that makes
just
sense,
because
we're hoping
I don't think that we'll go that direction or that route. But, I mean, Aiden Hutchinson is a name that we all know that's been fun to watch.
I think he's the safest pick
at
this position because he's polished. He's very refined. He's got NFL bloodlines. His dad was an offensive lineman for the Vikings forever. And he's what they call the highest floor player.
Mm-hmm.
You're going to get a guy that's going to be able to contribute right away. Now, in 5 years, is he going to be at the top of this group again? That remains to be seen because you've got some other athletes on this list that are huge projections. But if they hit, I mean, they could be all pro type players. Like Trayvon Walker's tools, they're ridiculous. Mm-hmm. Like, ridiculous. 35 and a half inch arms. And people are like, why are you guys talking about arm length so much? The key with arm length is if your arm is 35 and a half inches and you're a pass rusher, it often means in many cases, not all, but in many cases, you have a chance to make contact with that offensive tackle before he gets you. And if you get hands on him first, it's harder for him to control you and steer you wide of the pocket so you can't get to his quarterback. So it's an advantage mm-hmm. to have a reach edge because it can set everything up you do as a pass rusher. So if he can take those physical traits and develop a pass rush repertoire, he could really be something. I mean, that is – I've never seen 35 and a half inch arms on a pass rusher, ever. And I'm not going to pretend that I paid that close of attention to arm length for pass rushers like 15, 20 years ago. But I have over the last 10, 12 years, I can't remember a 35 and a half inch arm pass rusher. I mean, I'm sure there's one or two, maybe more. I mean, Calais Campbell is a huge human being. He's a defensive tackle, but I'll bet he's got 35-inch arms.
Tremaine Edmonds' arm length is 34.5.
Yeah. I mean, it's – and he's a freakazoid.
And he is like a tree.
Yeah. I mean, he's got vines for arms. They just go on for days. This guy's got arms that are an inch longer than that. It's just – it's nuts.
Pretty crazy.
The athletes they have at Georgia, it's insane. You're going to see – I think there were – I want to say there were – 6 or 7 seniors, and then the rest were junior eligibles on Georgia's defense that are in the draft. So I think all told, there are like 9 or 10 players from that Georgia defense in the draft pool. They're all going to get drafted. I think they're all going to get drafted because they're all 5-star high school kids.
Yes.
It's nuts. It's absolutely insane the people that Kirby Smart is pulling in down there at Georgia. Unbelievable. I mean, don't get me wrong. Nick Saban's doing a heck of a lot of that too down at Alabama, but – Georgia won a national title for a reason, and it was because of that defense.
That defense, and they were huge. You looked at that defensive line. It was like, how big are these guys?
Yeah, you couldn't even see the umpire that stands, you know, the umpire that stands in the middle. If you're the quarterback, you can't even see that guy.
Todd McShay had a 2-round NFL draft that came out 3 days ago. 7 Georgia players were taken in the first 2 rounds.
It's going to happen. So just prepare yourself. And it's not just going to be on the defensive side of the ball. That wide receiver, George Pickens, I like him a lot. He's going to be a second-round pick at the latest. And then James Cook, the running back, he's going to probably be somewhere on day 2. They are loaded. It's going to be a bulldog kind of draft, I'm telling you right now. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we may take a closer look at the wrap-up conversation on the mock draft watch. And we'll see if there's anything on the tweet sheet from you, from the OBL Fan Friday Mailbag. That's coming up next here on One Bills Live. Stay tuned. All right, welcome back. One Bills Live. Chris Brown, Maddie Glab with you. And we wanted to revisit our conversation since it was so unceremoniously ended by the Stefanski press conference yesterday. But our mock draft watch, as we know, Maddie compiles any and all mock draft Bills picks from around the country, from every draft nick known to man. And she compiles that list to kind of put together a cheat sheet for you to survey. And we didn't really get to finish all the results and the ins and outs of what the latest mock draft watch revealed. So take it away, Maddie.
Yes, we did not get to finish. We started, so I'm going to do a quick overview, and then we're going to look into 3 prospects that were mocked to the Buffalo Bills at number 25 in the Mock Draft Watch 5.0, which is the latest Mock Draft Watch to come out. So we tracked 22. Cornerback was the most popular position. 11 times a corner was mocked to the Bills. Number 2 was interior offensive lineman. 5 times that position was mocked to the Bills. And then wide receiver was 3rd. 3 times a wide receiver was chosen to go to Buffalo. So the 3 different names that I wanted to look at, one of them was quite popular. We will start with him. It's interior offensive lineman Zion Johnson out of Boston College. So Zion has been a name that has been mocked to the Bills since pretty much the beginning of when we started tracking these in February and January, and now he's continuing to be a popular name. So he's a senior, 6'3", 312 pounds. He was a team captain, all ACC honors every year. He was first team AP All-America honors in 2021. He started playing football in high school. I mentioned this yesterday. So he picked up the game at a later age. He also started his career at Davidson, where he played in 22 games, and then he went to Boston College where he played in 36 games. So this guy has a lot of games under his belt. I think you like to see that as an offensive lineman, especially as a senior, somebody who has a good resume and what they were able to do. He played in a triple option offense at Davidson for 2 seasons and then transferred to Boston College. So he played guard and tackle at Davidson, played a season of left tackle at Boston College, and then in his final season, he transitioned to what people say is his natural position, which is left guard. When you turn on the tape on him, he is powerful. He tosses people around. He took on double teams a lot and did a good job with that. He can get to his second blocks with ease, I think, and does it with really great timing as well. NFL Network grades him as someone who will eventually become a starter.
Okay. And I believe all of that. And he did have a good Senior Bowl week in Mobile back in January, which only adds to the resume. Here is my fear. The New England Patriots picked 21st in round one. And as we know, they traded Shaq Mason. And then they got a fifth-round pick back. So they lost him. They also lost guard-slash-center Ted Karras in free agency. They need help up front. And my fear is, if the Bills are considering him at 25, that he might be off the board because the Patriots desperately need offensive line help. And I think it trumps the help they need on the defensive side of the ball. I could see them addressing linebacker a little bit later. And so my fear is we get beat to the punch if we're looking at interior O-line, because that's what the value says. We're going to get beat to the punch by the Patriots at 21. That wouldn't shock me. I will say there is another guy I like who would be a really good consolation prize. Kenyon Green.
He's been a name as well.
Nasty player.
We'll have to look into him next week possibly, or the week after, because he's been a name that's been mocked to the Buffalo Bills, that interior offensive line position. Is supposed to have good depth there at the end of the first round leading into the second round. A cornerback that I want to look into who has also been a popular name. I got to say, not the most popular of this mock draft watch that we've tracked. The name for corners, at least in this one, was Andrew Booth Jr., who we have talked about before. So today we're going to talk about Kyler Gordon, out of Washington. So he was teammates with Trent McDuffie. We love Trent McDuffie, but we're not sure if Trent McDuffie is going to be available at number 25. But Kyler Gordon could be a good option for the Bills at that spot if he's available. He's a redshirt junior. He's 5'11", 194 pounds. He was a 2021 All-Pac-12 first team member. He played in 33 games in his 4 years, started in 12 games last season. So if you look at his career stats, 98 total tackles, 2 interceptions only, 14 passes defense. When you turn on the tape, I think his good hands show when he grabs an interception. He's got good vision to time and break up those deep balls. You'll see a lot of times, at least when I was watching his tape, a deep ball would be thrown his way, and he timed it perfectly to knock it out of the receiver's hands or knock it down before it got to the receiver. He looks like he can bait and jump routes, which is what you want out of a corner. He plays with a lot of athleticism and has some explosion to him as well. I think he has the tools to become something special at that next level in the NFL. He ran a 4.52 40 at the combine, and NFL Network says he can be good press and off coverage corner, and they say that he's somebody who will eventually become a starter.
Yeah, the thing about Gordon that's interesting, did a lot of martial arts as a kid, so I think that helped him develop the athleticism that you see now. And there are times where I would watch him and I'm like, man, this is like a safety playing corner because he's so tall. Because what is he? I think he's like 5'11 and a half.
But
he just looks bigger than that to me on tape. I don't know why.
I thought he did too.
I was surprised by that. He can jump out of the gym. I mean, 39 and a half inch vertical at his pro day. Hello. The thing about him is I think he relied a lot on his natural athleticism and didn't polish up his techniques. So here's a perfect contrast. Tre'Davious White wasn't going to blow up the stopwatch anything below like a 4.45, but his technique was sound. He came in as a rookie with very sharp and polished cornerback techniques, which gave him opportunities to make plays on the ball, interceptions, et cetera, instincts, those kinds of things. I think Kyler Gordon has always been the best athlete in the room, and because of that, he feels like he can safely rely on that. And in college, he could. Mm-hmm. That was fine. But the knock on him is that he still needs to develop his instincts. He still needs to develop his techniques on the jam, you know, bail technique, turning and running, hip flip, all of that stuff, because at the NFL level, it's a different animal. It's the best of the best. And you watch how Stephon Diggs runs routes. If you're going to go with natural athleticism, he's going to make you look silly. Yeah. So he's a guy that's got to polish that stuff up. Mm-hmm. So with good coaching, I agree with you.
True. But could become all those things.
Little time on the job, though, to kind of sharpen up the techniques where he's not relying on just his athletic ability.
Yeah, that's definitely – when you read about him, there's a lot of people saying that he needs to refine a lot of the things and become a better technician at the game, which means that he has a high ceiling and potential. Mm-hmm. So what type of team wants to take that on and see if they can turn him into somebody like a Tre'Davious White or like someone who can be a star corner in the NFL? Our final player that we're going to look at is an intriguing position that we talked about yesterday at that number 25 spot. It's running back. Breece Hall out of Iowa State has been mocked to the Buffalo Bills a couple times, just once in this latest mock draft watch that we tracked. He's a junior. He's 5'11", 217 pounds. So he's the right weight for the type of running backs that you're seeing have a lot of success now in the NFL, your Jonathan Taylor type running back. He played in 36 games in his career. He rushed for almost 4,000 yards, 50 touchdowns, 50 rushing touchdowns.
5-0.
Wild number. Averaged 5.5 yards per attempt and also averaged over 100 rushing yards a game last season. He had 20 rushing touchdowns, 3 receiving touchdowns, averaged almost 6 yards per attempt and over 120 rushing yards a game, had almost 1,500 rushing yards. This is someone who is smooth as heck in the backfield. He has hands like a wide receiver when you turn on the tape on him. He's a great pass catcher. He's, I think, going to be a very special running back at the next level. He's shifty and powerful. He's a smooth runner. I really enjoyed watching his tape. NFL Network grades him as somebody who is eventually going to become a starter. Do the Bills go running back at number 25? I don't know. He'll probably still be available at number 25, though, because a lot of people are saying running backs won't start till the end of the first round, or really second round is when you'll see some of these guys start to go. The nice thing about him is he has a lot of volume. He's done a lot of things in his college career, and he's done them very well.
Yeah, back-to-back Big 12 Offensive Player of the Year, and also 800 total touches in college. Now, some people like that because it's a good body of work. We know what he can do. Other people are like, ooh, is that too much mileage on the tires?
True.
On the tires, but yeah. I think his body mass is perfect. Like, he's thick all the way through, so he could be a three-down guy. He can hold up in pass protection. And as you mentioned, he really developed his receiving game over the last 2 years, 36 receptions just last year, including 3 touchdown catches. So along with those 50 career rushing touchdowns, he had 6 through the air. And he's probably one of the first 2 backs off the board. I don't think there's any question.
Yes.
All right. 100%. Good job on the mock draft watch, Maddie. We'll look for future additions coming our way in the coming weeks as the countdown is on to the 2022 NFL Draft. Break time for us. Maddie and I close it up next here on One Bills Drive. One Bills Drive. One Bills Live. Stay tuned.
I do that all the time.
All right, quick look at the mailbag here as we close things up on a Friday from Tuffalo. Would you offer Stephon Gilmore a 2 to 3 year contract instead of a 1 year contract? I don't know. Like, he's 32 years old before the season, right after the season starts. I think he can still play. If I'm doing that, it's like one of those void years to make the cap number more palatable. I don't know if I'm handing him a 3 year contract at age 32.
That's exactly what I was going to say. If you hand him a contract that's longer than a year, it would have to be a void year. I'd go for a year, though.
Yeah, see if you'd take a year. And then if you have to add a void year to make the cap number more palatable for this year's cap, well, then do that. Or the other thing is you can give him an option for a second year. You know, put an option year in there, and then you pick it up or you don't pick it up based on how he plays. Be very interesting to see what his decision is. I think one of the reasons why we haven't seen more cornerback movement on the free agent market, I think a lot of people are waiting on him to do something.
Yeah.
What is Stephon Gilmore's value so my agent can work off of that when it's time for my deal. I think that's why there's a holdup there right now.
He's going to be a little bit expensive.
Maddie, thank you for helping us out while Steve is out. I know you'll be helping us out again all next week.
I gotcha.
All right. So hold down the fort for us. We appreciate you helping us out. And hopefully I come back with a decent tan. We'll see.
Oh, I'm so jealous. Yeah. Have a good weekend, everybody.
Maddie, I'll see you Monday.